You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
It's Friday morning in Chicago. We're right at 9 o'clock, and you're listening to Relevant Radio AM 950. I'm Graziano Marcheschi, Director of Lay Ministry Formation for the Archdiocese, co-hosting today with Wayne Madjar as Vice President
good
for
morning.
Everything
good
at
morning,
Loyola
good
University.
Morning. How are you today?
I'm very well. How are you?
Good. Excellent. Excellent. It's Friday.
It's the eve of the Great Feast of the Assumption.
I'm trying to figure out a way to get out of town for the air show. So if any of you have any suggestions, let me know. Because, living in this neighborhood, we're going to get, it's going to be really crowded.
You could come and stay in my basement.
That's a possibility. I'll keep it on my list.
You can only hear the roar from there.
That's right.
So we are beginning our program here today with two wonderful young men who have listened and heard a call to the priesthood. I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Bob Regan, or is it Regan?
It's Regan.
You're not the president, the former
no.
president? Okay. Bob Regan, who attended Northern Illinois University and spent about 15 years in the publishing newspaper industry, and Julio Lam Salazar, who was born in Cuba and is trained as a medical doctor and is thinking about trading in that title for father or father doctor, doctor father, something of that kind.
We'll
so welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Both of you gentlemen are going to be entering Mundelein Seminary this fall. Tell us a little bit. We'll get some of the particulars about what that means and exactly what you're going to be starting come September. But I'd like to get a sense of the journey that brought you to this place. Bob, you want to start us off?
Sure, why not? I would say, sometimes people are saying, how did you come to this decision at this point in your life? And I'm 40 now. And, a lot of people think this happened in the last 5 years or 6 years in my 30s. I go back to my childhood. I go back to growing up in grade school at St. Leonard in Berwyn, Illinois. And I just always had an attraction to the Mass, to everything that surrounded the Mass, to the Eucharist. And I had that calling back then. But at that time, it just didn't seem like it was encouraged very much. So without that kind of encouragement that you need, it's easy to start to pursue other interests. I fell into playing golf, caddying at a local private golf course, earning money that way, sports, school. Next thing you know, I'm going to college. And in college, that's also a point in my life where I kind of even fell away from the church. So my calling comes about 5 years ago when, as I came back more to the faith and stuff like that and started relearning it as an adult and stuff, that calling that I felt as a child came back. So about a year ago in August, I said, you've got to pursue this now. So I began a one-year process of discernment after contacting Father Joe Noonan, the vocational director. And so a year later, we're just steps away from going to Mundelein.
You mentioned the word encouraged, Bob. Who was it, someone along the way in these last few years that prodded you, that inspired you to take that step, that next step toward going to Mundelein?
I wouldn't say it was any one person. It was more Christ. And it's not a decision. A lot of people's like, how did you come to this decision? I'm not even sure it's a decision.
Yeah.
I think it's something that it's not for everybody. And to me, it was more of a calling. But once I said I want to discern this, then yes, then those people showed up. Father Joe Noonan, Father Dick Miller, some of the priests we met through the InSearch program that we'll probably talk a little bit about later. Then they start popping up and, the people that you need to come into your life suddenly show up, and it's reaffirmed that way.
I'd like to hear a little bit about what attracts you to priesthood, but think about that for a minute, because
okay.
I want to bring Julio into the conversation here. Julio, you were born in Cuba, eventually made your way to the United States. Tell us a little bit about that part of your story, because it's very intriguing.
Well, so I was born in Cuba, came over to the States when I was 25. About that time, I was invited to the Youth Day in Canada, Toronto. I had already finished medical school, and I had worked there for 1 year. And then I just defected during that trip and came to the States.
Pretty bold move.
It was. It was kind of like a rough decision to take.
Was it something you had planned to do before going, or was it
It's kind of like a tough decision. I mean, I wasn't planning on doing it as such, but I mean, there was a lot of discernment and a lot of like thinking about it and things that came up, and then it was.
How important was family in all of this?
It was very important. I mean, I think it was probably, you know, family and community down in Cuba, like my parish and the work I was doing down there. What was kind of like holding me from escaping from the Cuban the government and all that kind of stuff. So it was pretty tough decision.
Now, I know you've returned home since then, but at the time that you defected, did you know that you would be able to return home, or was that a big question mark?
Yeah, that was kind of like an open question at that time, because, you know, politics, we kind of like never know how they're going to move, and especially down there in Cuba, unfortunately. So that was something I considered, and then, thanks God, I mean, I was able to go like last month and spend some time with my family after 7 years, so it's been kind of like a blessing.
So how does a guy who has spent so much time focused on the medical profession, given years of his life to study and actual practice, all of a sudden begin to entertain the possibility of doing something radically different like priesthood?
Yeah, so when he has like, I bring in that question up myself, and I try to like keep it honest with God. But I mean, it's not that sudden call, I would say. I mean, as Bob was saying, I mean, it's something that has been like probably maturing through years. When I was in medical school, that's when kind of like started, and it was kind of like very, very sudden at that point, and then it kept on kind of like going. So you keep like. Looking at this question, but I guess, I mean, in some part of it, you're saying that, okay, I'm busy now, I'm in medical school, I'm doing something. And it sort of like goes like that until it gets to the point that you said, okay, I have to like take this question and answer it for once and forever.
Do you think the fact that question was always there, that discernment process was always there for you, that it affects or affected how you studied for medical school and the kind of doctor that you are?
Well, I mean, I think I try to concentrate pretty well on my medical studying and that kind of stuff. And it kind of like, I don't see it that far off. Like, you know, in medicine, it's kind of like a ministry, and you can always do so much for people, you know, like helping them in their suffering and sorrows and all that kind of stuff. So it kind of like came together, and I think, you know, like helping these people and getting sometimes some feedback or something, it helps. But I guess at a certain point you feel like your limitation, like you're just, you probably, it's not just like physical stuff, but.
Yeah. Well, I think the root word of the word savior means healer. So a priest is called to follow Jesus in being a healer, and obviously so the medical profession and the priestly profession are not so different, I think. We'll explore that a little bit more. Bob, let me come back to you with that question about what is it, you know, there's a lot of 40-year-old guys out there who might still be single and who are not thinking about priesthood. So what is it in you that attracts you to that vocation in life?
I'll go back real quick and say this. You know, I did have that calling as a child, but as I got older and I started to think about this and try to think about, you know, is this what I want to do? So much of that, I think, is service. I think, you know, I spoke about the Mass before, and obviously every priest wants to do that. But I think it's the pastoral work you're going to do. You know, when I first started college, I was going to go into psychology. I wanted to be – so I've always kind of had that pastoral side to me. In college, I just didn't realize that it was going to come to this point. But I think it's the service to the people who need help away from the Mass and stuff like that. Having had the opportunity to live in a parish for the last year, I've seen all that's involved in being a parish priest. And I'm somebody who likes to do a little bit of everything. So I think that's gonna come in hand nicely should I become a priest.
Bob, was your discernment process and then eventually your support that you got from your family, your friends, and everything, how did your friends respond, react? Did they know that this was always kind of part of you?
When I first contacted Father Noonan, we spoke the first time we spoke. I think we spoke for an hour on the telephone, and after we had that discussion, and I knew I was going to begin the discernment process, I thought, okay, now what do I do with family and friends? And at first, I was going to keep it in. I was going to be like, you know what? I'm going to wait maybe till once I'm accepted to seminary, maybe down the line. And then something spoke to me and said, they can help you discern. So I opened up. I went to, immediately to my family, my brothers and sisters, and it did not surprise them. They remember me from childhood. And this sounded weird to me until I kind of opened up a little bit more about it with some other guys in the seminary and some priests. But when I was a little kid, I played priest in my bedroom. I said mass. So who does that?
So did I, and I could never get a chasuble that was long enough for me. Julio, we're going to cut you off for just a second. We're going to take a quick break. And Julio, same question for you when we come back. How did your family and friends kind of help you in the discernment process? You're listening to Catholic Communion and Faith on Relevant Radio, 950 a.m. It's 910 in the morning, and we'll be right back.
If you haven't read the Catholic New World lately, you're in for quite a surprise. It's bigger, bolder, and better than ever before.
The Catholic New World is a rich and diverse resource for Catholics throughout the Archdiocese of Chicago. It carries stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Our most read column is written by our publisher, Cardinal Francis George, our shepherd, teacher, and leader.
Our columnists provide support in spirituality and evangelization, and you'll want to browse the Around the Archdiocese page, your gateway to Catholic activities throughout Cook and Lake Counties.
As we celebrate the Year for Priests, look for stories about how we honor our priests, in the Pope's words, with gratitude for their work and witness of their life.
Visit our website at www.catholicnewworld.com. View our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and while you're there, subscribe to the Catholic New World or call 312-534-7777.
Better than ever, subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
The cemetery ministry is a core ministry of our Catholic faith tied to the corporal works of mercy. Cardinal George says, "It's comforting to know that our Catholic cemeteries are caring for the remains of our loved ones awaiting the resurrection." There are 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries willing to help you during times of loss. Call 708-449-6100 for assistance. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
Time now for a Catholic Festival of Faith news update.
Online registration is now being accepted for this two-day celebration of our faith, scheduled for the Stevens Convention Center in Rosemont on October 16th and 17th. Go to www.catholicfest.org to register and to learn about the speakers, activities, and entertainment being planned. That's www.catholicfest.org.
Stay tuned to Relevant Radio for more Catholic Festival of Faith news updates.
Welcome back on this warm Friday morning in Chicago to Catholic Community of Faith. I'm Graziano Marcheschi, Director of Lay Ministry Formation, co-hosting with Wayne Majars, Vice President at Loyola University in Chicago. Today is the eve of the Great Feast of the Assumption, so let's all remember to honor our Blessed Mother Mary tomorrow by attending Mass and praying especially for vocations, because that's the topic of our conversation this morning. We're talking to two young men who will be entering Mundelein Seminary this September, and they come with very unique stories, as all seminarians do. These are guys who are not the traditional age seminarian, but men who have lived a substantial amount of life and achieved a great deal of success in their chosen areas of call, and now they're hearing a new call to serve God, to serve God's people through ministry in the church as ordained ministers. So we're talking to Bob Regan and Julio Lam Salazar. Just before the break, Julio, Wayne put a question to you about the influence of your family. Was that it, Wayne?
That's it.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess the family, I mean, it's like a great influence when you, on the values and stuff that you have. When I was like discerning, you fall in that temptation of like kind of like protect that process and kind of like keep it to yourself. But I started like telling my closest friends who were, I mean, kind of like, okay, this is, they didn't feel like it was something new. They just, and they were very supportive, which was good. And then my parents, they also were partially, my dad stayed hanging in there and I mean, getting into the idea. But most of the people were supportive. I mean, some others were kind of like surprised because I mean, I was in obviously medical school and I was graduating and all the things. And kind of like I was thinking, well, all these years of study or something, that's the way people see it.
So, like Bob, all of those family and friends were really part of your discernment process. Whether they supported you from the beginning or not, probably both groups were playing a role, right?
Definitely. You're like you weighted down from one side or the other one. And people around you, they can tell you sometimes, you know, like what do you have to bring and what you could work on.
You know, I'd like to ask you to get deep down and personal, because I'm assuming and hoping actually that your decision is coming out of a relationship with God that's grown over these years of your life. Talk a little bit about that. Bob, you mentioned that 5 years ago, things began to shift within you. There were, you know, early signs in your life. You know, you talked about playing priest when you were a kid. Many of us probably did that. But as an adult, talk about that shift and how your personal relationship with Christ began to evolve and plays a role in this decision that you're making.
When I set out professionally in the newspaper business, my ultimate goal was to become a fairly premier golf writer for a major publication in the United States, whether Golf Digest or one of the major papers. Set out as a sports writer, small daily, and got into that rhythm, became a sports editor. And then I would say this was more about 8-9 years ago. I just suddenly lost something. And I started to kind of – I was treading water, and I'm like, what's going on? For somebody who always was successful, I saw what I wanted to do, and I did it. Something was starting to go wrong. At this time, I'm not going to Mass. I had fallen away, like I said. I never left the faith. I became lazy spiritually. So when things started to kind of go bad in my life, things aren't going right, I'm like, something's missing. I returned to the church. And that's when I say I rediscovered Catholicism as an adult. I read the catechism. I'm reading the Bible again. I actually want to go to Mass. I mean, I looked forward to it. I didn't feel I had to go. 2 or 3 years of that, and then this calling starts coming back. And so here comes my child, and God speaking to me going, you know, come follow me. And Scripture does start to speak to you if you have the ears that can hear.
Julio, what about your story? You obviously in a little different position than Bob, because Bob was in effect pursuing a position. He had an idea in mind as to where he wanted to be. You were probably, I would guess, in your mind professionally already there. You had finished medical school. You had become a physician. You were working in the medical field. How did your spiritual zest really get ramped up to the point where now you consider the priesthood?
Just to back it up a little bit, as I was saying, I mean, it came from some years back. I mean, since I was in Cuba and I was working as a leader there and all that kind of stuff. So the question was there. I was already in medical school. So then it comes a point when you keep on working. I mean, and I like medicine and I liked what I did and all that kind of stuff. And then like a couple of years ago, I would say like probably 3 years ago, I felt like, you know, that question was still there. And I needed to give it an answer. And then, so then I decided to seek for a spiritual direction and go for, and it was suggested to go to this groping search when I started.
Were you less enthusiastic about medicine?
I don't think so. I think it was, I was still, you know, giving my 100% over there. Because, I mean, I did emergency medicine, and it's kind of like it takes a lot of you. So it was... Yeah. And I think one of the reasons why it took me so long is because in medicine, you're always, so busy, so you're always trying to figure out what's the next step. So it's kind of like you keep pushing this question down, like saying, okay, God, no, now.
No time.
Yeah. We talk about that later. And but I mean, later could be way later, and then, you know, it gets to the point that you have to.
Yeah. You know, I'm just going to put my question back out there again. I really would love to hear you talk about you and Christ, you know, aside from priesthood, because obviously priesthood is a way that you live out the relationship. So priesthood isn't so much the goal as following Christ. And if following Christ means going the path of priesthood, then you do that. If following Christ means being a layperson, then you do that. But it's all about following Christ. You're two young men who've made Christ primary in your life, I'm assuming. Talk about that.
Well, also, I think it comes kind of like slowly. In my case, I grew up in a communist setting. So, I mean, I converted when I was like about 17. And then, you know, kind of like everything started. It's like that kind of like crack that you open to Jesus. I mean, I used to pray and stuff before that, what makes me think that he was there and always close to me. But then at that point, I was just actively practicing at church and all that kind of stuff. So it was growing slowly from like ministries at the parish and catechism. You get like more compromise and more compromise, and you get this feeling that God is telling you, I mean, you're mine, and I want you to like serve me, and you want to be closer to him and serve him more and better. And then it does. I think that's where the question comes, like what do you really want me to do, and how can I serve you the best?
All right, Bob, hold that thought. We need to move to a break. You're listening to Catholic Community of Faith. It is 9:20 in the morning. We'll be right back after this short break. Please don't go away.
Real men answer the call to the priesthood. Is God calling you?
You know, I'm honored to be a priest for the Archdiocese of Chicago. I think it's great.
There's a desire to want to give back and to help and to serve those who are especially in need.
I think there's a wonderful opportunity for us to bring good news to a world that's very much in need.
When I experience through my ministry someone being brought closer to the Lord, it's an exciting, thrilling moment.
If you feel God's call to a priestly vocation, contact us at 312-751-8298 or visit our website at chicagopriest.com. John Paul II once said, "Do not be afraid. Open your heart to Christ. The deepest joy there is in life is the joy that comes from God. Jesus is the hope of the world. The people are calling. The world is calling. God is calling. Answer the call to the priesthood."
Catholic Charities is providing community health fairs with free medical services to residents of Chicago and the suburbs. Our next fair is scheduled for Saturday, August 22nd at St. Francis of Rome, 1500 South 59th Court in Cicero. The health fairs are open to the public and offer various medical screenings, dental exams, immunizations, and general physicals for adults and children. Local social service providers will be in attendance, offering a one-stop shop approach for families in need of assistance. Volunteers are needed to do a variety of tasks at the fairs, including helping to register participants and guide them from station to station. Please call 312-655-7298 for more information. That's 312-655-7298. We hope you take advantage of our Catholic Charities Community Health Fairs.
Welcome back, 9:23 in the morning. Bob Regan and Julio Lam Salazar, our guests this morning, two young men who will be entering Mundelein Seminary this fall, came in through the InSearch program, both of whom have had, and in Julio's case, and as well as Bob's, previous careers, professionals, one a medical doctor, one in journalism. Bob, before the break, Julio was commenting, we were talking about a Christ-centered call and what that really ought to mean for a young man who is about to embark on the journey toward ordination. You described earlier how important it was for you to go through that discernment process, both formally and informally in your life. But how has all of this come together around Christ at this point for you as you prepare to enter Mundelein Seminary?
I had spoken earlier a little bit about falling away from the church and stuff like that. And I lived life separate from Christ. Like I say, not a conscious decision. You begin to live life. Things are going on. You're doing your own thing. I was doing my own thing. And things just – I began to take on some behavior I didn't like. And it was, you know, why is this happening? I'm not happy. Something – there was a hole inside of me. And sometimes if you have that hole inside of you, you're filling it with other things. And as I began to think about this, I realized that it was the absence of Christ in my life. As the analogy I love is the power source. You can look at an outlet in the wall, and you know that the power is behind there. But if you are not plugged into there, you can't draw that power. And I was unplugged. And as soon as you plug that cord back in, you begin to draw Christ's power. And he fills that hole for you. He fills the hole for me. I mean, everybody's different. Everybody has a different relationship with Christ. But Christ began to fill that hole. And as I began to come back to the faith with the Bible and the catechism, the questions are answered, the questions I had, and it begins to make sense. And the biggest one is I am the way, the truth, and the life. And that speaks to me, and that was the answer I needed. And so that's that. You know, we all have a different personal relationship with Christ, but it's that he fills that hole that I need inside of me.
As you approach Mundelein Seminary, I'm sure there must be some apprehension. You know, this is a radically new thing in a radically different place. Talk about some of the concerns, some of the apprehension that you might have.
In 1990, I think I closed my last book in college, and I shut the book, and I go,
"Never again.
I'm never going to study again." Two or three years later, I realized I became more of a bigger reader than I ever had. I read more outside of college than I ever had, but I thought I would never study again. So my apprehension, a little bit, is entering back into the academic setting, and just getting into the daily grind of going to class, taking notes, studying, and stuff like that. But it's relieved by the sense of my calling. So it's a concern, but I know it'll be fine.
Be afraid. Be very afraid. Those guys are tough up there. No, they're wonderful. You're going to love it. They're great. Some of the best theology teachers in the country
up at
Mundelein Seminary. Julio, what about you?
Yeah, well, for me, besides like living in campus, it's the part that we were talking about, living in college and all that kind of stuff after all these years, you know, like having your place and things. But, you know, like kind of in my case, because I've been like academic, so it never kind of like stopped studying for in my career. So it's kind of like a little bit of a shifting from these kind of like other sciences, let's say, like, in, I don't know, anatomy, physiology and all that kind of stuff, to study theology or philosophy, when it's kind of like a little bit of a different setting. So you have to kind of like abstract more or something like that is. And it's so far, I mean, the sciences that I've been studying, I mean, you can like see something and you see results and you base your stuff on statistics and things. So that's a little bit of a...
And as the seminary classes, this is kind of for you, Gratz, as the seminary classes have really become less traditional aged, and a lot of guys like Bob and Julio are in classes talking with one another, going through the process of discernment toward ordination together, that really makes for a very different and a dimension of fulfillment and richness that didn't exist before when everyone was going through the traditional track. Would you agree?
I think that's true. I mean, because these guys are coming there very intentionally. You know, before you went through 4 years at Quigley, then you went through 4 years at Niles College, and then you just continued right on. It became this automatic kind of a thing. So whether you were still interested in being a student, you know, that was questionable. But now, you know, a guy like you young men, you're making a very clear decision to put on the brakes in what you've been doing and turn the car in a different direction. So when you go there, you know what you're embracing. You know, you're embracing being a student. But it doesn't all go away. I mean, from some of the stories I hear at the lunch tables, you know, at any age, it's always a challenge to be a student and to buckle down and, you know, to have that discipline. So,
especially if they have you for class.
Yeah, well, no, they won't have me. They won't have me. I just work up there. I don't teach.
Bob, do you think that your previous professional life in journalism is going to help you be a better priest?
You know, it's funny because when I made the visit last year to Exploring Priesthood Weekend at Mundelein, and it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday, one of the seminarians who spoke, and he was a Polish construction guy, and he made the analogy, you know, whatever you were doing in life, you're suddenly going to be doing that for the church. So I look and I did writing and I did sales. So you can kind of take that and you do that now for the church. You will write about Christ and you will sell Christ. So he was construction. He will help build the church. So, yeah, I think my, you know, because I interviewed people, I wrote, I did sales and stuff like that. I think that's going to help me with dealing with people.
You're a very
like
colorful guy, Bob. You just gave us an image of Jesus as outlet, you know, electrical outlet.
He's an outlet.
Now we're going to be marketing Jesus. So.
That's right.
But not a bad idea. Well, we're moving to the end of our time together here, so we want to wish both of you guys just the best of luck. Julio, is your medical career going on hold now as you move up to Mundelein?
Yeah, now it has to be on hold because, I mean, Mundelein is going to take a lot of my time and my energy. That 100% is going to take.
But if I have a problem, can I come over and visit you?
Sure. All right. Any kind of questions or something?
I know who I can go to if I got a problem.
That's right. So as you begin your year of pre-theology,
yes.
God bless you both, and let's continue praying for young men like Julio and Bob as they discern their call. You're listening to Catholic Radio on AM 950. We'll be back with a whole new topic about the World Parliament of Religions as soon as we return. Please don't go away.
Choosing an elementary school for your child is one of the biggest decisions you will ever make to shape your child's future. So why pick a Catholic school?
I want my kids to learn more than the three R's. They need a faith-based education so they make good decisions.
I want my son and daughter to go to college. At Catholic schools, attendance and graduation rates are nearly 100%. And when these kids graduate, they go to college.
My teacher is so cool. She knows who I am. She helps me when I have trouble figuring things out.
My son isn't a number. The student-teacher ratio is 18 to 1, and Catholic school teachers are really dedicated.
I want my daughter to feel welcome, to be safe.
The test scores are well above the national average. Look out, college. Here they come.
Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Schools to learn more about the great benefits of a Catholic education. Invest in your child's future. Make your child a winner for life.
You're invited to attend an evangelization workshop, Learning to Labor in the Vineyard, sponsored by Bishop Joseph Perry's office and the Office for Black Catholics on Saturday, September 19th at St. Rita High School at 7740 Southwestern Avenue. This promises to be a wonderful workshop for everyone who serves in church ministries, for all who want to share the good news. The facilitator is Deacon Alex Jones of the Archdiocese of Detroit. The day-long evangelization experience is free. You can register through your church community or contact the Office for Black Catholics at 312-534-8376. We hope to see you Saturday, September 19th at St. Rita High School. Call 312-534-8376 and become part of Learning to Labor in the Vineyard.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
And good morning again. Welcome back to the program, my Catholic Community of Faith, Relevant Radio 950 AM, Wayne Majars, along with Graziano Marchetti this morning. And second half of the program, we're going to look at a completely different topic than we have been spending our past 30 minutes on, and that is the Parliament of the World's Religions. There have been several meetings, as many of you know, referred to as the Parliament of the World Religions, most notably the World Parliament, which goes back to 1893, which was really the first attempt to create a global dialogue of faiths. The Centenary Conference was held in 1993, and this led really to what has now become a new series of conferences under the official title of the Parliament of the World's Religions. And we have three experts on the subject this morning with us. First of all, on the telephone, Dr. William Lesher. Dr. Lesher is president of the Council for the Parliament of World's Religions and also the past president of the Lutheran School of Theology here in Chicago. Joining us in the studio is Sister Joan McGuire, who is the director of the Office of Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs for the Archdiocese, and Jason Rankin, assistant to the director for the Office of Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs. Welcome to all of you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much. Glad to be with you.
Dr. Lesher, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Terrific. Well, thank you very much for being here this morning. Maybe we can start with you, Dr. Lesher. Tell us a little bit about maybe to start the conversation, the history of the Catholic Church or Catholic involvement in the Parliament of World Religions.
Well, thank you. Let me, first of all, thank you and Sister Joan McGuire and others who have made this morning possible. We're very happy that the Parliament has an opportunity to address and speak with the Catholic community in Chicago because you've played and are playing such a vital role in this exciting development of interreligious dialogue around the world. Just to pick up on your comment about 1893, while there weren't a lot of Catholics at that parliament, reflective of the religious history of that period, there was nevertheless a sort of breakthrough there. While the 1893 parliament is known for relating Eastern religion to Western religion and the first dialogue between these two great religious communities of the world, it was also true that on the stage at the Parliament, much was made of the fact that this was a breakthrough in the ecumenical world as well, with Protestants, Catholics, and Jewish people, and even a few Muslims appearing on the stage together. So way back in 1893, there was a contribution and a participation. But that became a leading role for the Roman Catholic Church in the Centennial Parliament in 1993, when Archbishop Joseph Cardinal Bernardine played a major role in making that parliament happen, being a presence at the parliament throughout the period, and also engaging very creatively with other religious leaders such as the Dalai Lama and so on. I could go on and also just say that Cardinal Bernardine also was instrumental in organizing a relationship with how the Vatican would be represented at these parliament events by the local archbishop, and that arrangement has persisted now so that as we have moved to other cities, to Cape Town in 1999, Barcelona in 2004, and now in Melbourne, Australia, that relationship has persisted, and Cardinal George has been very helpful in communicating to his colleagues in other parts of the world how the Roman Catholic Church has been involved and credentialing us to have a good and fruitful relationship with these communities around the world. So we're very grateful for that kind of participation.
That's a wonderful background. Let me just turn to Sister Joan for a moment. For the sake of our listeners, could you clarify the distinction between ecumenical and interfaith?
Yes, I'd be glad to do that. I do this every time I get on this program because I think it's important. In the past 100 years, the ecumenical has meant the Christian communities. So that is the goal of the ecumenical movement within the Christian churches and communities is visible unity because they saw that being an obstacle to the missionary work. And the interreligious is with other religions. So with Christianity being one, and then Judaism, Islam, and then this 93 Parliament and going forward, those Eastern religions became part of it. So that is the distinction between the two. Actually, when I came here in 1987, the agency was called the Ecumenical and Human Relations, and it was divided and then to Ecumenical and Interreligious. So you could see within the Archdiocese there was that understanding of this change.
Yeah. I was trying to detect a pattern in the dates of the parliaments that have occurred, and I'm not a good enough mathematician to have figured it out. Is there a set number of years between parliaments, or is there some other way of deciding when they occur?
Well, maybe I can pick up that comment. Yes. The first span you can, I'm sure your math will cover that. That's 100 years,
right?
From 1893 to 1993, and then I think it's safe to say that the council that I chair now and that Sister Joan sits on, also that Father Bema, who is well known in Chicago, was a very prominent member for years and years. Timothy Lyons, Father Timothy Lyon, other people have served on this council. This council was created for a once-in-a-lifetime celebration of the centennial of the first parliament, but it was so overwhelmingly successful and such a fantastic spirit of desire to explore interfaith dialogue further that the council decided to hold a parliament every 5 years. So that's the
5-year cycle.
5-year cycle.
Got it.
We got it.
We got
it.
All right, Jason, give our listeners an idea of what happens. What is going to happen in Melbourne? What happened in Chicago back in 1993 at a parliament? What goes on?
Well, the parliaments themselves, there are days that are very full and very rich, and I've attended two of the parliaments in the past, 1999-2004, and we'll be going again to Melbourne, and so we want to definitely invite our listeners to attend. The days themselves begin, at least the past couple parliaments have begun, with services in which the religions of the world have their own services in the morning at which anyone can attend and observe the prayer. That's a very important part of interreligious dialogue, is observing the prayer of how other religions pray in their own way. And then there are various programs that take place throughout the day, some to explore panels, seminars, lectures to explore various topics among interreligious dialogue, among issues of peace, issues of justice. And then in the afternoon, there's generally a time of an open forum in which people can just come together and explore a lot of the various topics. And then the evenings are usually a plenary session around a specific topic theme for each day that then links and connects to the overall theme of the parliament.
All right, we need to move to a break. As soon as we return, we're going to continue our conversation about this exciting world event, the Parliament of the World's Religions. Don't go away.
The Chicago Catholic Scripture School is now accepting applications for classes starting in September throughout the Archdiocese. This is our Bible study program for adults. Students come together weekly to pray and study the Word of God with teachers who are themselves strong Catholics with an extensive background in Scripture and theology. Year 1 classes will be held at St. Anne's in Barrington, St. Joseph in Libertyville, St. Julie Billiard in Tinley Park, St. Teresa of Avila in Lincoln Park, and St. Philip Neri in the South Shore neighborhood. There will be a year 1 class in Spanish at St. Cecilia in Mount Prospect and Precious Blood on Chicago's west side. And our first scripture school in Polish will be held at St. Hyacinth Basilica. For more information or to register for the Chicago Catholic Scripture School, visit www.catechesis-chicago.org or call 312-534-8053. That's 312-534-8053 and www.catechesis-chicago.org.
The Archdiocese of Chicago has launched a blog and wants you to join in the conversation. Here's Cardinal Francis George talking about modern communications.
Church was in radio when it first started, and then television. Now with the blogs and the internet and all, the church has to be there too, for the same reason St. Paul was in the town square in Athens and Corinth, the Areopagus, where people would come together and listen to everybody talk. Well, that Areopagus is now electronic.
Cardinal George will rotate with other archdiocesan leaders in posting their thoughts on faith-based topics and taking part in this electronic dialogue. Visit our blog at www.archchicago.org. Read what Catholic leaders have to say and become part of the discussion. That's www.archchicago.org. We hope to hear from you soon.
We'll see how this works. I'm curious myself. I'm looking forward to it.
Welcome back, 9:44 Friday morning. Dr. William Lesser, who's the president of the Council for the Parliament of the World's Religions, is our guest, along with Sister Joan McGuire, here from the Archdiocese, the director of the Office of Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs, and Jason Rankin, who is the assistant to the director in the same office here at the Archdiocese of Chicago. Dr. Lesher, before the break, Jason was kind of giving us an idea of what happens when a parliament comes together, some of the components of it. In your role as the president of the council, do you have an objective, a theme, kind of something that the council looks at as they begin to shape the program for a parliament such as the one coming up in December in Melbourne, to make sure that it's going to be successful, that it's that the religions that are going to be represented are really going to walk away from it energized and anxious for the next one to occur? How does all that happen at the planning level?
Well, it's always a work in progress, I might say. The Parliament has evolved from 1993 to what will now be the next Parliament in 2009, and we have learned as we move from one Parliament to another as the movement itself changes, because we're certainly in a different place in the interreligious world today than we were 15, 20 years ago. Let me just say that the way the theme gets set, there's a theme for each of these parliaments, and the theme for Melbourne is going to be make a world of difference. Make a world of difference, and there's a sort of double entendre there. The world is full of different kind of people. Make a world of those differences, and then change the world. Make a difference in the world. Building on that theme, which was sort of an overarching theme that was agreed on by our committees, our boards, both here in Chicago and also down in Melbourne, our two sub-themes, if you will. The first one is hearing each other, and the second is healing the earth. And those both speak to the richness of the Parliament tradition. It is a place where people hear each other. Not only listen to each other, but hopefully hear each other as a part of the dialogue between people of various faith traditions around the world. And then healing the earth is really the overarching theme, which we heard from our constituency around the world. What is the most important thing for religious people to be talking about today? And the healing of the earth, certainly the environmental crisis is a major theme in that. But also all the other aspects of healing that need to go on between people. And so we have, under those themes, other themes like indigenous people. We'll be dealing with the tremendous urgency and need to address the needs of indigenous people as they're expressed in the Aboriginal peoples of Australia and around the world. We'll be dealing with poverty, the Millennium Development Goals of the United Nations. We'll be looking at food and water and the urgency of addressing those issues. We'll be dealing with the ways in which religious communities around the world are working to build peace, basically by pursuing justice. And a new theme for us is interreligious dialogue, interreligious cooperation, interreligious work together as a part of social cohesion. Yeah. This is a theme that's very prominent with our colleagues in Melbourne.
Speaking of hearing and healing, how have the events of 9/11 impacted the vision and maybe even the urgency driving an effort like the World Parliament?
I would like to make one comment, and it was brought up in terms of the indigenous. When we went to Cape Town, I think it was very important that for the first time the African religious communities themselves became part of this interreligious dialogue. So, and of course, that being set in Cape Town had such a the whole thing was a lot of reconciliation in terms of even the place where we met was abandoned area because it had been demolished during the apartheid days and had one little Christian church on it, and the parliament was held there, and it was sort of making that place a sacred place, what had been so I think, and I think looking at it in Australia, that indigenous aspect is so important because the government there has even apologized very profusely in terms of what they have done and what needs to be done. So your question of the effect of them, I think, is quite powerful. I know, Jim, if you have if there's anything else.
Jason, you mentioned earlier that you have already attended two past parliaments.
Yes.
Is there? I would imagine there's a couple of a lot of things going on, but in one sense, those who attend, like yourselves, are already immersed in and energized by the idea of promoting, encouraging interreligious dialogue. What are the expectations of folks like you who attend a parliament when they come back to their communities, to their faith communities, be they Catholic or anything else? Are there expectations that the parliament is going to take life, live on until the next one in 5 years?
I would say it's comes back to promoting the message and promoting the message in everyday life and in all those circles of influence that the individuals who attend the parliament have. When I was first attending 10 years ago, I was first beginning to be involved in interreligious dialogue, and I was attending at the time I was a student at Northwestern University with the Council of Religions there. And I attended, and part of what I did at that time was to come back and to tell everyone about the experience I had, the people I met, the deep religious.
That's why he's working for us, is because he went to the Cape Town Parliament. So it was very, very beneficial from the Archdiocese from that point of view.
All right. Well, we need to move to another short break. When we return, we're going to continue our conversation about the World Parliament of Religions. Don't go away.
You are invited to join Cardinal Francis George and other interfaith guests on Tuesday, September 1st for the 2009 Interfaith Iftar Dinner. Iftar, an Arabic word meaning breaking of the fast, is done every evening during Ramadan, the Muslim month of fasting from sunrise to sunset. This year's program takes place from 7 to 9 p.m. on September 1st at the Mosque Foundation in Bridgeview and includes the breaking of the day-long fast, observance of Muslim sunset prayer, dinner, and a program. There is no charge, but seating is limited. Your RSVP is required to the Office for Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs at 312-534-5325. That number again is 312-534-5325. We hope to see you there.
When was the last time you spoke with your neighbors? How are they holding up in these current hard economic times? People in your neighborhood, even the person living right next door, might be struggling. It could be a few late mortgage payments, a food shortage, or even problems with substance abuse or domestic violence. At Catholic Charities, your neighbors are in our care. We work to feed, clothe, counsel, and shelter anyone in need. Consider donating to our Neighbors in Need Fund. Visit us at CatholicCharities.net or call 312-655-7525.
Catholic Community of Faith, the voice of the Catholic Archdiocese of Chicago. We're talking today with Sister Joan McGuire and Jason Rankin of the Archdiocesan Office for Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs and Dr. William Lesher, President of the Council for a Parliament of the World's Religions. I was told it's important where the apostrophe is. It's not a world religion, different religions, very clearly identified, coming together to talk. I had asked earlier, and the question somehow got lost. Dr. Lesher, in light of the events of 9/11, how has this impacted the focus of the parliament and the urgency that drives it?
That probably, Wayne, is the most important event in the whole interreligious movement history, perhaps in terms of creating the awareness that this is an urgent task that we're about. As I go around the world now and ask that same question, what stimulated you to be involved in the interreligious movement? Almost universally, 9/11 is brought up as one of the reasons why people became aware that while religion in that instance was a force for evil, religion in general is for the vast majority of people of faith of all different traditions is a source of peace and hope and human endeavor together. And so the interreligious movement has really become real and urgent as a result of that tragic event.
Jason, let's give the folks information about how to get connected with this event.
Some details on the 5th Parliament of the World's Religions taking place this December, December 3rd through 9th in Melbourne, Australia. Registration currently is available for, it's approximately $475 U.S. when you make the conversion over from Australian dollars. And a variety of hotel amenities are available in the vicinity of the major venues, which will be held at the Melbourne Convention and Exhibition Center. And the website for more information is www.parliamentofreligions.org.
One more time.
That's parliamentofreligions.org.
And religions with an S.
Correct. Religions right. At the end, and no apostrophe in there.
No apostrophe.
The web address. And the phone number is 312-629-2990.
Sister Joan, a two-part quick question. How many are expected in the Melbourne Parliament to be attending, and who's it for? Who should come?
Who should come? I think the numbers, I don't know where they are now. In the past, it was 8,000 and 8 or 10,000, so that would be the expectation. There will be, within these, there's an assembly that will have some special religious leaders that would come together for a small section of it. The other is for people throughout the world who are interested in this. There would be hopefully many from Australia and perhaps more from Asia than have been in the past where the parliaments have been held. So I don't know.
So it's really a broad cross section of not only religious leaders and those involved in interreligious dialogues, but also for the general population and academics.
And actually, we're trying very hard to get indigenous people from the from the continents, so that there would be someone from bringing those people together. In the different workshops, very often it's just people who are engaged in some way and want to present their presentations.
Dr. Lesher, you mentioned that official Vatican representation is accomplished through the local ordinary, the bishop of the diocese where you're meeting. Are you able to get, I know different churches, different faiths have different structures. How do you get official representation from other faiths?
Well, we don't really make an effort to have so-called official representation from all the faiths. It's the faith groups themselves that decide how they want to be represented at the parliament. And for example, the Roman Catholic Church does have a relationship with us through, as you say, the ordinary. Other faith communities, as you say, are organized in such different ways that official representation is difficult to judge. But what we attempt to do is to bring prominent spokespeople from the various religious traditions of the world to the parliament, so that there are, as Sister Joan has mentioned, there are leadership people from virtually all the religious communities of the world. But the parliament is really about people.
Well, we're going to need to end our conversation on that note. We want to thank our guests, Jason Rankin, Sister Joan McGuire, Dr. William Lesher, and we wish you all the best of luck with the Parliament of the World's Religions. You've been listening to Catholic Community of Faith. We thank our producer and engineer, Mr. Michael May. I'm Graziano Marcheschi, co-hosting with Wayne Majars. Have a wonderful weekend, and let's pray for one another on the great Feast of the Assumption tomorrow.
This is Cardinal Francis George. Thank you for being with us this past hour on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Join us every day, Monday through Friday, as the Archdiocese of Chicago presents the Catholic Community of Faith. Have a wonderful day, and God bless you.